Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Thousands assembled in Civic Center Park, Kenosha, Wisconsin, this past Saturday to decry the police brutality that put Jacob Blake in a hospital bed and locked him there.
I know there's a lot of parents out here in this crowd. You cannot imagine what it feels like to look at your baby paralyzed from the waist down. Shackled. Where was my son going? They already put him in the bed.
Blake's father, Jacob Blake Sr., set the tone.
Good people of this city understand, if we tear it up, we have nothing. If you tear it up, then we'll have nowhere to go. I don't want you all to be homeless. I don't want you to be storeless. I don't want you not to be able to buy your sons, daughters, and grandbabies the food and the milk that they need. Do me a favor. My nation is asking. Stop it. Stop it.
Other speakers included Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, U.S. Congressperson Gwen Moore, and a speaker whose name we still don't know, who strayed way off message.
If you kill one of us, it's time for us to kill one of yours.
Those words of rage and despair played into the very race war fears being stoked by Trump, the GOP, and the right-wing media sphere. So what does the Daily Kenosha News put in its headline? That outlier expression of anguish, the inflammatory threat. Daniel Thompson was a digital editor at the Kenosha News until Saturday when he resigned over his objections to the headline. Daniel, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you for having me.
So you texted the boss, executive editor Bob Heiss, and said what?
I screenshot the headline, I circled it in red, and I sent him a text saying, I want to know exactly who wrote this headline. I sent a few more texts, the last one I think stating that I don't know if I can associate with the company after this, and I need to calm down, but I wanted you to know immediately. And you can tell by my wording that I didn't believe that Bob was the one who wrote the headline.
And Heiss replied. Now, did he say, gee, Daniel, it seems newsworthy to me, but as the Kenosha News' only black editor, perhaps you are sensitive to something that I just don't see. Let me mull this over and think about the context and the likely effect of this decision. Is that what he said?
That is not what he said. His reply was that I should, yes, calm down. He said that it was a direct quote from the event and that it was a public threat, and therefore kind of saying that it was a valid thing to put in the headline. That led to me saying that I quit.
Now, I should observe that the decision to highlight one moment out of a long day of speeches is not in and of itself bad journalism.
No.
We are trained to focus on the most newsworthy detail, even if it's only an instant. But if the instant that you choose to journalistically isolate mischaracterizes the news event and inflates an outlier moment, and especially in this environment stokes fears, you believe what?
I believe that you're being irresponsible. And it's been in my experience, even covering protests, that the way that people have thought about approaching stories in the past does not do justice to stories revolving around issues such as justice for Jacob Blake, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, police accountability, and things like that. Because in these situations that are very tense, very volatile, it's almost more important to set up the context completely in which they're taking place before you start throwing out these big quotes.
In the past, when you flagged issues of insensitivity or nuance, Heiss and other editors listened and, as I understand it, often accommodated your concerns.
Yes, that's almost what makes it more surprising, is because we did have a relationship where I was very vocal about things that I didn't agree with. We could talk about these things, and in the end, maybe they saw my point, maybe they didn't, but more often than not, if my point was valid, things were adjusted.
We invited Bob Heist to speak to us. He declined, but he did give us a quote, which is, "Our staff has been working tirelessly to cover the protests and civil unrest in Kenosha. The community depends on us, and we are working under challenging circumstances. We are telling all sides of the story with photos, videos, and stories, and we will continue to do so." Now, you want an apology from the paper to the Blake family at a minimum. That isn't one, is it?
No, but I do understand. Here's the thing. The Kenosha office is taking a lot of heat right now for something that was not the fault of anybody in that office. Besides, you know, my interaction with Bob. I've said I would not name the person publicly, but I'm comfortable saying that person did not work in that Kenosha office. In ways, it makes me even more angry that Lee Enterprises and publisher Mark Lewis, who oversees WizCon Valley Media Group, which is Kenosha News, Journal Times, and Lake Geneva Regional News, he hasn't said anything either, and I'm sure he knows exactly who did it too. But he's letting Bob and the Kenosha staff take all the heat.
This summer, the New York Times media columnist Ben Smith wrote about the generation of Black journalists who covered Ferguson in 2014. He connected their experiences then to changes that we're seeing in American newsrooms now as they, quote, try to find common ground between a tradition that aims to persuade the widest possible audience that its reporting is neutral and journalists who believe that fairness on issues from race to Donald Trump require clear moral calls. Was the decision to stand by this headline immoral?
Perhaps. I still wonder in the back of my head how we got here. But I've thought there are a few options. For one, there is the possibility that it is a boss who has been, yes, working tirelessly and working many hours and doing so because he's short-staffed because of cuts by the parent company over the years, who is lacking sleep and probably angry, and then he has an employee basically address him in a tone of complete insubordination. Was it a pride thing? Was it anger? Was it a culmination of just what he was dealing with? Probably. Was it a moral stand? Maybe. And then there's the third option of Bob wasn't the one who did it, but he wasn't also going to throw the person that did do it under the bus. So as much as people want to give me credit, I think Bob should also get credit too. Because even though this wasn't his fault, he hasn't put the blame on anybody else.
Well, you're clearly fair-minded and beyond that which I expected, to tell you the truth, under these circumstances, which makes me wonder, going back to that Ben Smith column, whether you agreed at the time or embraced the notion that the rules of journalism, which cleaved so heavily on being disinterested observers, do have to change under the circumstances of social and economic injustice. Are you radicalized by this experience?
It radicalized me at first. If you see my tweet and everything, my sudden, angry, almost dictator-like call for this person to publicly apologize or I'm going to name them. Yes, I had a radical moment. I was angry. And I'm thankful that people actually responded to that tweet and questioned me on it. And as the day went on, as my anger dissipated, I started to see their point. It would be almost the most hilarious example of hypocrisy to rail against my former employer one day for their irresponsible acts that put the Black community, or even the local community in general, in danger, when I'm threatening to do the same thing, but not to a community, to a specific person and a specific family. And in that moment, I realized that I had become the equal opposite reaction of what they did. So So, yes, there were moments where I kind of lost control, but now I'm back in control. Back to more objective perspective of things. And I'm happy to be.
One last thing, Daniel. When this happened, during this momentous episode in the struggle for social justice and against racism and police brutality, you were the only Black full-time member of that newsroom. The story isn't over. In fact, we're seeing other coverage that is beginning to peel back even more of the layers of social injustice in Kenosha in particular. But now, there are zero full-time Black employees of the Kenosha News. Do you think, in the end, this episode will help the proper telling of a complex and heartbreaking story? Or have you walked out with the only sort of institutional knowledge required to keep that coverage honest?
No, not at all. The Kenosha News staff is incredible. Deneen Smith, Jill Roselle, Heather Pointer, Liz Snyder, Dan Trutchell, Terry Flores, if I hadn't mentioned her already, James Lawson, Sean Krajacek. These reporters and photographer have worked so hard to cover the community. As much as people like to think that I've been speaking up in the newsroom, they're the ones who have spoken up to me when I'm wrong. So do I think that the lack of diversity is troubling? Yes. But I also know 100% that there are good, unbiased reporters in that newsroom because I've worked with them side by side for years. I don't worry about Kenosha with that reporting staff there. I worry about what management does to what that reporting staff turns in.
In the aftermath of all of this, you have announced that you're going to stay in town. You're going to publish an online independent news site. And you had a GoFundMe or some other online tool for generating some capital. And the community responded.
In droves. And honestly, I don't even know how to react to how nice everybody's been. Because for a lot of my life, and especially the past few years, suffering through my own kind of verbal abuse as a journalist covering certain things, I was feeling very cynical and, in fact, made many social media posts about losing my faith in humanity. And in all of this, it's been completely restored. It's funny. The Kenosha News and leaving that ends a chapter of my life, but everything that's happened afterwards puts me in a much better position for the next chapter, both as a person and as a professional.
Dude, you are so Wisconsin nice. I do not know how to process this. Your equanimity is just, it's hard for me to get my head around.
I worked at a small town in Nebraska, and I didn't know in small towns anywhere that everybody just waves at you when they drive by. It took me days to adjust to that level of nice, because I was like, wait, do I know that person?
Well, I feel like you're waving to me. Daniel, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you too.
Daniel Thompson is now an independent digital journalist in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, Zandra Ellen, and Eloise Blondio. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.